Hello, I'm Carrie Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders.
Hell tells me you're live. Hey, Stream Nerd, thank you. Welcome. Hello, I am Carrie Garden. Welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. And we are, like I said, we are live. If you are here, I can't see you. So please comment and let us know that you have joined us. We look forward to your conversations and your questions because that's the beauty of being live, is that it's interactive. So please chime in, let us know you're here. And then throughout, please bring us your questions. We're going to unpack it all. We have a lot to unpack. It's going to be a wild ride. Before we get there, knock on Cullen. What a treat. A treat. I'm so grateful you're here. A little bit
Pleasure's all
about
mine.
Natan and why he's here. Yeah. So let me just do a quick intro because, well, like why you're here, why I picked you. I don't know if that's the word, but why I felt like this would be a good conversation. So Natan and I met in 2007, totally dating us, that's cool, on the 18th floor of Universal McCann, right off of Madison Avenue, a little Mad Men action. He was my very first interview after graduation, so no intimidation there, although a ton of intimidation. He met me in the lobby, he shook my hand, he took me back to his office, which was a windowless shoebox.
That's right.
Really, really hope you didn't have that office log, like really, really hoping. Of this is his very first question to me was, "What media planning is?" And I did not. He told me, and I still got the job, and it was beautiful. And that was like the epitome of leadership in my point of view. I was right out of college. It was my very first job, and he totally embodied all of that. I was like, "It's cool. Like we got this. Are you teachable? I just want to know if you're teachable." That was my sort of recollection of the moment. But I'm curious. Not kind of like, do you even remember? You met so many people and did so many interviews. I'm sure it was a blip on the radar there.
Yeah, it was. I don't think you could ever be a blip on the radar. It's funny because you said like picked you for this. Like I think we did actually pick you for the first role, but it was so funny because we were hiring, right? For if I recall, I think we hired four, entry level candidates at the same time across the Verizon business was a very big business, at UM still is. I'm sure, and the different places it sits, but we were hiring across consumer and B2B and other lines of business. And I just remember the thing that stood out the most, right? And it was interesting because everybody had their own personality. I think if you recall, like the group that we ended up hiring, like I don't think anybody was actually the same, right? It wasn't like it was clear we weren't hiring off a model. And I think that's important. We'll talk about diversity and how the different ways diversity shows up sometimes. But it was awesome. You came in and the curiosity, I think, really, really got us. I think that's for me, at least specifically, it was, you can always tell when someone's teachable and when someone is, I would say when you're looking at entry-level candidates, it's not about everything they've done before. It's about are they good clay, right? Can they be molded, and not molded by someone, but able to be molded, right? They're going to mold themselves, right? But they're open to be able to do that. And I think that one of the ways to easily tell is their curiosity, right? Are they asking questions, right? Or is it sort of you trying to pry information? I think that's what makes good clients, right? Also, you can
That's true.
you share, you have the conversation, you're able to have a dialogue, you're able to have a back and forth. And so yeah, you blew us away with your curiosity. I think you said as live things go, we'll see if it just started pouring and thundering. So if you hear that in the background, it's just the weather out here back in the States, Northeast is
Here.
not, it's not predictable. So hopefully the Wi-Fi will hold up, but it's some thunderstorms going on. Yeah, live. Woo!
Yes, it's try. I can feel the internet trying really hard. And John, Alexander, wherever you are, it sounds like you're having some internet challenges too. So maybe you're in close proximity. I miss the Northeast summer thunderstorms. We don't get them here. And yes, but hopefully the internet will hold. I love that you sort of clued in on my curiosity. That really means a lot to me as I still try to hold that today. But I also try and remember like the team of people that we had there and the leadership of yourself and some of the other folks that really set the bar for what leadership meant for me and how I sort of brought that along. And that's why I was really excited for this conversation, because I feel like as much as we've grown, you know, it's been 15 years-ish. The core of who I remember you to be in terms of a leader holds to this day. And I want so many more people to have a great example of what that is. So thank you. Thank you for jumping on with me. And I love kicking this off and hearing the guest's story of how you got to where you got to, because I don't actually know it. So I'm on the edge of my seat here, Natan. Tell us, what is your story? What do you do, and how did you get there?
Yeah, so I think for the sense of the story, it's for me, the story is never, and that's how I approach work, it's never just professional, right? It's always about the personal. To me, those worlds, you know, for better or for worse, when I think about balance and I think about work and life, they always blended together. I always felt like sometimes personal was having the bigger push, and you know, sometimes professional is having the bigger push. But for me, that was always the case. I think, you know, first and foremost, I grew up in the agency world with you, and that's why I loved, you know, going back there and being around it. I got the privilege of working on, you know, we talked about our Verizon days. I had the privilege of working on a tremendous amount of, I would say, Fortune 100 companies, but really incredible brands, BMW, Procter & Gamble, and others, you know, across the board, other industries, airlines, you know, financial services, and other sort of great conversations to have. And I think that helps you grow, right? I mean, the more experience you have, the more exposure you can have, you think about challenges differently, right? It's different when you're working with a Subway restaurants and a, you know, that has, you know, needs traffic every day versus you're working with something that has a, you know, a much longer, you know, sales cycle, right? Where you have to make sure that the conversation stays relevant than just, you know, what are we having for lunch today? So it's just, you grow up in that different way. And I think for me, that was incredibly helpful. Subway restaurants, for example, and they're all the athletes they were associated with, Verizon, all the sports sponsorships, and connections they had, their different focus on different devices, right? Every month, right? We were launching something new, communicating something different while still trying to communicate.
Like right where the iPhone came out too. So it was like this.
Yeah, I don't remember if you remember some of the fun stories. And again, I can't, you know, 100% verify these things are true, but we had heard about, obviously, listen, it was a big deal, right? iPhone chose AT&T to come out. I think after a number of months and a year or so, it was specifically probably because AT&T gave them way too much, right? They thought the subscribers were going to do it for them and they were just going to have the iPhone. And I'm not sure that ended up being a good deal for AT&T in the long run, because they gave up a lot to do it. But at the time, Verizon was incredibly sensitive, so sensitive that we heard that one of our clients who pulled out an iPhone during a meeting, you know, was immediately like let go on the spot. So things were very tense. Again, I don't mean to start rumors. These are other things from a long time ago. But no, it was definitely tense times. And that's what it was, right? You had a new device coming out every month, and it was really about, right, the stock price, right, and all these things were about whether or not you were able to sell that device and the retail capacity. And then thank God we've moved into a world where, you know, the device is still there, but also there's so much content, right, and so many partnerships and so many relationships that sort of build up. But yeah, those were a fast-paced, crazy days. I don't know how many, what do we used to call the revisions on, like the R's were amazing. The budget reviews and things like that. And we have our good friend Andrew Wirtz to you know, to help us you know, remember those things, and like the feeling that you would get, right, when the budgets actually matched up, right? That number you had in your head actually matched, and we would be, you know, matching. Really? And you know, I still take that with me, right? Like, to me, that's part of, you talk about the journey, it's really growing up like that. And I think seeing the other part is the people, right? And that's what we talk about, right? Being able to be there and working those times and building relationships. You know, it's not, you know, being in the army, but it's, you have those battlegrounds, you have those sort of, you're in the trenches together. And we use a lot of that language. And it's because it's, you know, I remember days, nights working till 1 a.m, mm-hmm. 2 a.m, whatever it might be. I remember a night when we worked so late, and then I came outside and our boss stole the car home. Back in the day, we used to have to like wait for the car service. And like, he got in my car without even asking who it was for, because he was so tired. And like, I had to wait like another hour and a half at 2 a.m. Like, these things would happen, but that's like part of,
yeah,
that's part of what bonded us all together. And I think that's what it's really about. It's about the people. It's about the connection that we had. And I think for me, watching you, you talked about the great teams, right? And
definitely great team.
Over the years, that's really the great people I worked with. Watching you and what you've done and what you've created here, not just with your agency, but also with your family. Watching, you know, folks like, you know, Scott Downs, who's, you know, one of the leaders at in the industry, and, you know, and working again, I think, with another one of our team, Kristen Kilbride, who was there at the time. But you're working with, you know, Evan, who's leading, you know, in the world that he's in.
So all these great stuff now.
Of, you know, a number of them have become sort of tops in the industry, and a lot of them are still contributing. And thank God, stay close to most of them all the time. But just incredible folks, and that's really what we're all about, right? And we'll get back to that humanity aspect as we talk about sort of the main topic of the day. But I think that's the biggest thing, right? Is as I've grown up and as I've moved from the agency world into the brand world, and really have the fortune of working with New York Life and getting closer to a business and really understanding what's happening in that sense, working with a field, you know, doing both switching to a field marketing role, working at a nonprofit, and then coming back to the agency world. For me, that's just been all, right? Like, I look at the world as like one big GPS, right? And all your experiences are one big GPS. And every time you change the destination, right? It sort of inputs into that GPS and it helps you change your destination. That's the fun of it, right? The journey is the fun part. The destination means that it might be over, right? Like, you don't want it to be over. You pick a new destination.
We're still going.
Like you did, right? Just pick a different place to live and the journey starts over again, right? Like, you take challenges on in your life.
It certainly does. I am curious about the Verizon team in particular, because there was sort of an alignment of stars with those folks between, so I'm going to date ourselves. I keep saying we're going to date ourselves, but it's true. Like, it was sort of the boys club. There was three men and one woman. And then you hired a bunch of us that were all women coming out of college. And we shook it up, which was awesome.
Almost all women. But you can't forget Frank. We can't forget, you know, Frank, who I love dearly.
Chris. Yeah. And we had, there was a little bit of a revolving door there, but at the end of the day, there was this beautiful group of people and clients. It was just this, like, it was the alignment of all the stars that you wish for in any universe. And I'm just curious as to when you all planned on, okay, we were getting promoted, we were going from seniors to supervisors, we're going to bring in a whole new batch of folks, we have this great client. What were sort of, you mentioned curiosity, which you found in me, but what else were you sort of looking for in trying to build that array? Or was it just you, like, was there a plan there, or did it sort of just happen? It seems like too good to be true in my recollection.
I think that's the thing. I think when you focus on, you know, there is a plan, right? There's a plan, and there are also different personalities, right? And so part of the plan is about understanding, right? Like, understanding that it's the work is going to be challenging, but you can't go into a conversation being like, are you prepared to work for, like, that's not what we're about. Or like, you have to find somebody who's going to be, and I think where you come in, where I come in, where a lot of the people that we hired came in, is like, who, when I talk to them at 9 o'clock in the evening, is going to be as positive, right? And as curious as they were at 9 o'clock in the morning, right? Or whatever it's going to be, who's going to be there. And you want to be able to build the team that has the personality. Like, we'll teach the knowledge, right? The knowledge will come through the work, and you'll have some of that. You'll have knowledge through the networking. You'll have knowledge through, you know, best practice sharing through the agency, right? A good agency, you're going to do that in a lot of different ways. Your peers, right? People who didn't even work in the business, but your peers. And I think that's, you know, one of the bigger shames is, you know, especially nowadays when there's so much remote work, is that people don't get, right, that sort of involvement and connection to their peers. But that's what we look for, right? It was looking for people who, right, if you look for the people who are going to be perfect, you're never going to find anybody, right? If you look for the people who can build, right, just like a marriage, right, go on a few dates, at least in my culture, right, go on a few dates, spend some time together, and know you can build a life together, right? You don't have to practice building the life together first. And I think that's what you look for when you hire candidates, is if you're clear on what you need and the type of things that will work well, it's not a one recipe fits all, right? It's not one person and one unique skill set. There are multiples. And that's why we ended up hiring. It ended up being just a variety of personalities. I mean, probably looking back at it, like, a very wide variety of personalities and
approach. Which didn't always get along. It was an interesting.
It worked. I think that's a great point. Tension, right? Like, perfection isn't avoiding tension, right? A perfect working environment is not where you have no tension. It's where the tension that you have is around is around the business, right? And not around each other, right? Is around the business that you work, because growth comes from tension, right? And that's one of the most important things, is don't try to create something that's, you know, stress-free. Try to create something in where everybody has the positive attitude and the goals that stress and that tension is towards something greater, because you want that. You want people to butt heads, but because there's some real substance there.
Yes, because we all believe in what it is we're trying to accomplish.
And you are a head butter, so we were very, very happy.
Well, I needed to understand, and sometimes in my wanting to understand, I sort of pushed really hard on things, but I got there. I was still malleable at the end. I'm still to this day, I drive my team nuts. Yeah, but I mean, I just want to make sure I've vetted it enough that I truly understand what's happening and we're making the right decision and I have all the right information. I just, as I like to tell my team, they're really sick of hearing me say this, but I can't make decisions in the dark. And, you know, it all comes back to data, and it all comes back to that very first job of all the spreadsheets and all of the land. In terms of humanity, like you mentioned, and marketing of what we do, you mentioned this in our prep call, but like, we're in a very interesting time right now. Your words. It probably takes a little bit back to 2008, when there was a lot happening in the market and the economy and digital coming online in a really big way from a marketing standpoint, and print sort of like trying to hold on for dear life. And it feels like we're sort of entering that friction again. Where do you see the marketing industry go? What's like the trajectory of it all?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big question. I think for me, I always start with, right? Like I got into marketing, right? And why I, you know, sort of fell into this career and fell in love with it is because of people, right? For me, marketing, you know, is very much about behavior change, right? And to understand behavior, you have to understand people. You have to understand why they do the things they do. And you talk about data, yeah, that's the signals that we get. But at its core, it's really about understanding people. So when I think about the marketing industry, right, to me, it oftentimes is just a microcosm of what's happening in the world, right? Or what's going on in the world today, and sort of the reactions that are taking place. And we're in a very, obviously going to be entering a new political cycle in a very, you know, politicized world for a long time now. The economic pressure is back and has been here for a while. So we're seeing sort of a place right now where that, like, as people, right, we're maybe not showcasing our best selves. At the same time, there's so many more opportunities to connect, right? So many more platforms and programs and new tools that are out there to be able to help us do our work and live our lives better. But not all of those tools have the rules written yet, right? Of how to do it, of when to do it, of how to do it properly, of what the risks, right, that may be involved with getting involved, whether it's about automation, whether it's about AI, whether it's simple things like ChatGPT, which I think are phenomenal. And I've used now hundreds, if not thousands of times, just for simple tasks for my kids and for them to use and to get to used to it. Because again, this is the way the world is going, but there's also what we always find, right? And maybe this is the, you know, this is the New York lifetime in me, where risk is like one of the bigger things to focus on in the financial industry and sort of preventing risk, is that unfortunately they're always going to be bad actors, right? And so people who are going to use those same developments, right, and that same negative feelings to take advantage of people, they're going to use people that are looking for, you know, roles, people, you know, where we are right now in terms of layoffs and in terms of, you know, unemployment. They're going to try to use those people to their advantage, because when there's desperation and when there's a way to convert that desperation into action, that's bad behavior, right? That's bad marketing. That's using marketing for the wrong reasons. It may actually be good marketing, but it's using it for the wrong reasons. And I think that's the world that we continue to find ourselves in. And a lot of it's driven by the fact that everybody's chasing the same dollar or a similar dollar. Everyone is chasing that same thing. Agencies are chasing it from a margin standpoint. Businesses are chasing it from consumers, and consumers, you know, are chasing it from their employers. And that's sort of going round and round and round. And you have all these bad actors in the middle trying to steal it from each one of those parties. So I think the more we can recognize that we're have more in common and together on these issues, then we can start to tackle them. But I think we're in a very high pressure environment, and that's going to keep driving, really drive through a lot of what we're seeing in terms of some of the recent stories, right, with Google, the recent stories with, you know, concerns over Chat GPT, congressional hearings, right, that will continue to take place, where they, you know, on social media, where they felt like they were too late, and on AI, where they want to get ahead of it. You're going to have the world start to police this themselves versus waiting on the technology companies, the individuals to police, because we really can't trust ourselves most time.
And what are we going to exchange as consumers at the end? That's a big question in all of this as well. Like, with the bad actors, with our data, with being taken advantage of, with us all up against each other versus working together, at some point, you're right, the government's going to step in, and then we're, as individuals, we're going to have to give something up for our safety. And what is that? I think that's a big sort of question mark.
That is a huge, it's a huge piece. I mean, I think that's the understanding. And I think what happens is, if we know, right, the goal, if we can align on the goal, right, the goal is to create, right, a safe and secure future, right, for our children, for our families, and do that, I think then we'll be together. I think not everyone necessarily views that as goal number one, right? If I'm a publicly traded company, or as I mentioned, our good friends, you know, Andrew always said there's no such thing, or at least maybe his professor in Michigan said there's no such thing as, right, corporate social responsibility in for-profit companies, because ultimately that same social responsibility is there to enhance the bottom line, right? As a fortune, you know, as a profit company, you have the responsibility to your shareholders to drive return, right? And so that return, right, sometimes you're making a decision based on that return, as opposed to based on what's good in the world and how safe and secure those things need to be. So I think it's the risk is to us. And I think what we have to talk about, and I want to get into a little bit, is what can we do, right, as individuals, yeah, right? Because we can sit here and talk about Google and Meta and their behavior and their choices to wear blue in the face, but it's not going to, it doesn't equip us, right, to be better. Yeah, there is some awareness, and I'm sure there's some people that still aren't aware of all the things that are going on. And I'm definitely not aware, like, they're, you know, the things that make the headlines, you know, and other things that can be researched. But what can we do, right? How can we help bring some of that moral compass, as we talked about, back into our process, where it's left us a little bit?
I don't want to stay in the doom and gloom, I agree, but I also want to make sure we're painting a picture of the challenges we're up against in terms of this new era we're about of AI that we're sort of embarking on. And it feels to me, and you mentioned that there's a lot more tools and there's a lot more platforms and there's a lot more opportunity out there, but it also feels at the same time, actually there's less places to go, especially from like an advertising and media standpoint. It feels like we've got some three big players. We got Google, we got Meta, we got Microsoft. TikTok's like hanging in there. But at the end of the day, like, these three companies essentially own most of where we advertise. So yes, there's more technology out there, but in terms of where we can go, it feels like the world's in some ways getting smaller.
I think it can feel that way at times. Definitely when you look at, right, you know, take search, for example, and you got 90%+ still, right, within the Google platform. I also think that a lot of that's happening, right, because it's the destination, and therefore the aggregation that's happening of content is just happening there. You know, listen, go on Facebook, you know, go on TikTok, go on a lot of times you'll see the same content, right? Go on Instagram, mm-hmm. you'll see the same content. It'll just be housed there. So I think we have to make choices as individuals. I think the original places where that content lives, there's still a lot, right? And I've talked to a ton of people, both within the business, from a business side. There are companies that are, you know, swearing by not using Google and not using any of the walled gardens, right, until the transparency comes. And I think those are the kinds of decisions, you know, that you can make as a business and start from sort of the inside out versus, yeah, if you're going outside in and trying to get everybody and then seeing who raises their hand, then you want to cast as wide a net as possible. I think we have to change the way we approach driving business And I think we've been doing that a little bit in philosophy is, right, best customer, right? Where's the next best dollar spent? Who's my best audience? I think we actually took that. We would go inside out, right? Look at ourselves and our internal customers first and the people we're doing business with and find a way to reach them. We don't necessarily need some of these walled gardens and non-transparent places to be able to do that. And I know there are businesses that are thriving on being able to cut that out. But to your point, the risks are humongous in terms of not just these properties, right? But also in terms of anywhere, right? The fraud, right? In terms of the invalid traffic itself is significantly high. The fees, yeah. Right? All the players that we're adding on, right? The people that we have to pay from a tech standpoint, all these things. This is only, right, the spoof sites, the content that isn't real, the fake news, all that's going to grow, right? That's what these same tools create. There is doom and gloom. And if you want to take it to the nth degree, right, I remember this quote from the first congressional hearing on AI where they were asking, so you mean somebody can launch a drone, right, through AI and give it an attack, right, to you know, give it a command to attack someone? Yeah, absolutely, that can happen. Is it happening now? No, but the possibilities are out there, and where the possibilities lie without sort of a group standard of what's acceptable and what's not, and a motivation to do what's right, it doesn't make a difference, right? You will enable bad actors, or you will even become, you know, a bad actor themselves. I think most people go, you know, start, especially when it comes to the business side, did Google intend to do what they did? Maybe not. You know, give them the benefit of the doubt. But once the money starts pouring in, right, it's very easy to keep doing what you're doing if no one's going to, you know, double check and blow the whistle on what's going on.
Let's talk about those fringe companies. I'm really curious in terms of, you know, I feel like, you know, back in the day, we had all these tools in terms of ComScore, in terms of figuring out where our audience was from, what programs they were watching, what newspapers and magazines they were consuming. I feel like now that the world's gotten so big and the customer journey is no longer very linear, that data sort of gotten either lost or we stopped paying attention to it. But it feels harder to know, like we sort of just accept it's the big players. It's Google, it's Meta, it's LinkedIn. These are where the places where we need to be. Is that, yeah, but it sounds like that's not necessarily what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, well, we've shifted to this place where we tend to care less, right, about the, you know, think about it relative to your, like, you know, not you personally, but in general, because, you know, you probably have the whole world to see where you are and it's awesome. And you're still probably exploring it. But, you know, us who just sit at home sometimes and watch on the couch or whatever it is, right, our viewing habits, right, we stop caring about which channel, right, owns or produces the content, right, unless they make us download their app or whatever it is to be able to connect to. And even then, right, we are fans of the content, not necessarily the provider, right, is the world that we live in. It's the same what's happened, I think, a lot of times from an advertising perspective, is that we've stopped caring about where the content is coming from, right, and why they've made the content to begin with, and only cared about who's seeing it, what the end result is, and that can I incentivize an action, right? Can I incentivize something based off the bat of it? And I think that's, you know, where we run ragged and programmatic and other places, and we've sort of, you know, we're chasing a dollar and you know, but we don't want to do that with the long tail. So we want to do that where we can aggregate you know, impressions. And that's where it sort of goes back to, well, if I just join, right, Google, then I can, you know, get these tens of millions and billions of impressions if that's what my business needs to survive. And I think what happens is that we have to start decoupling that and go back to where those tens of billions of impressions are made up, right, of hundreds and thousands of impressions. And I think we are starting to have the systems in place that through transparency and through the technology, we can actually go after and build our reach and build our audience through safe places at a time versus sort of aggregating and going down. And I think to your point, we need to go back to, do we trust the person creating the content, right? Do we trust, right? Part of what we looked at, right, in the old days, it's like we looked at the score, right? We looked at the reach. We looked at those important messages and the cost and all those things. Remember those wonderful scorecards that we built. But we'd also look at, like, is this a good partner to work with, right? Some of the intangibles are, you know, are people, right? What's the attention, right? What's the engagement that people get when you know, they have the reach, but are people really engaged with the content that's coming? I think that will always be the truth, which is if the content is engaging, right, then people will, you know, feel connected to it. And that's really what you want to do as a brand, is you want to create these relationships with consumers. You don't just want to share information. You want to create a relationship depending on, you know, where you are in that journey. And I think that's what we have to go back to. We have to go back to the partners and influencers. It's not just like, let me work with a partner that works with 1,000 influencers, and so I'll do a mini campaign and work with 1,000 influencers. Well, what do I know about those 1,000 influencers? How many of those 1,000 influencers are really saying things that I would never want? You know, I used to say, right, like the golden rule is like do unto others as you would do unto yourself. But I think as you become a parent, it's like, stop thinking about what you're okay with and think about what you'd be okay with people doing to your child seeing, or right. Or yeah, what information would you be comfortable with them knowing about your child? And I think that's right. That to me is we have to put these processes in place to make sure that we're not just handing somebody money and not caring, right, about what goes on. Because that's what I see when we started talking about CCPA, when we started talking about, you know, all these privacy things. It was like the agency world was like, well, as long as the publisher signs this thing, so that we're in the clear, right? Or the brand was saying, well, as long as our agency and publisher signs this thing, we're in the clear. And everyone's just basically, you know, moving from this place. They're just passing responsibility on. Mm-hmm. I think it's motivated by, you know, what I've started to term as shifting from the, you know, can we to should we, right? I think that's one of the big things that we have to do, is that we have to put in place the way in which we look. Like, design thinking is huge. And we talk about how might we do this and how can we do this. And that's great stuff to think about, but nobody's asking the question of, should we do this? And I think we have to bring that back into the process, is should we, just because we can, just because it's not that technology exists, just because we've passed whatever the creepy test is from the consumer side, right? That's not the only bar, right? The bar is also, should we be doing this? Is it the right thing to do? Are we adding benefit? Are we adding value? Because at the end of the day, if you can't answer those questions with a positive, then maybe we shouldn't, right? Or maybe we shouldn't to the scale that we're doing it, or to the way in which we're doing it. I think that's the big shift that I'm, you know, hoping starts to take place, is that we move from this can we world to the should we world, and at least apply that filter.
I feel like the answer is we always can do it. And I love what you're saying of, but should we? And it's this delicate balancing act that I think is taking place around the bottom line, right? As everybody's racing to the bottom line. And I think that if we can take a step back, I love what you're saying about relationships. You know, I remember back in the day of print, and even somewhat from a direct site buy standpoint, the relationships that salespeople would go out and the effort that they would do, that they would go through to make an impression with us as media planners, was immense. Like, that was their job. Their job was to leave the office every day and go find ways to create a relationship with us. Sometimes to our dismay of like, I'm in the middle of trying to work and I don't really need this coffee right now, but I appreciate what you're trying to do. To, you know, the lunch and learns. I remember so many times, you know, Sports Illustrated and having so many of those wonderful events, from making sneakers to trapeze school, right? Those memories stay with me, but more importantly, I remember the person. I remember her. I remember the experience we had and the relationship she built with each of us, not just as like, you know, the VP of media, but every single one of us, she took the time to get to know us. And
we love Janice.
I do think it's coming, it's trying to come back to that to a degree, of where we are extending our hands now to say, this is from a B2B perspective, this is a people to people world, and you're going to trust us because you know we're a real person. And so, but it's a tough world, because how does that scale? Like, that's where I think companies are really struggling, of like, we know it's going that way, consumers are demanding it, but on the business side, it's like this big, but how do we scale this thing?
Well, you just reminded me, well first I'll do a very quick important aside. Janice Bayo is one of the best people I've ever met in my life, just out of just, you know, because you may not, I still stay close, you know, with Janice, and you know, following her story, and her kid, we used to go, you know, like her kids were around, and her, if you, I don't know if you remember this, but her husband worked for Verizon. So we were working on the account, and we worked on Verizon. Again, we probably haven't shouted out, you know, Elizabeth Mahoney, who she had a great relationship with, and all these things, and Steve Fox and those guys. But her son actually plays Harrison Bader. Her son is the center fielder for the New York Yankees. So if you didn't know that, you should know that, but he was fantastic in college, ended up playing for the St. Louis Cardinals, and now is back home, you know, near his hometown of the Bronxville in there. So yeah, these relationships develop, but it's again, it's seeing the life that develops around it, right? And I think part of that, you made me think of something really, I think, profound that's somewhat obvious, right? But I think it needs to be said, and I think we need to remember it when we make the choices that we make, is that not everything that takes time should be automated, right? We're trying to make things go faster. And we think that if we make it go faster and we take things out of, right, out of that process, or add, you know, automation to the process, that it's always going to create less cost and therefore greater revenue or greater return on the other end. And I think that's, there are certain things that, yes, it may be true, and it may be true in the short term, it may even be true in the long term, but it doesn't, when I, that's what I mean when I go back to the should we. The answer is should we, right? Should we take the people out of the process in all standpoints? I mean, business will always be, I believe, a relationship-driven piece, and you can conduct business. And we're seeing companies grow, significantly grow, just conducting business, you know, digitally without ever talking to someone, right? But then you hear about customer service, and you hear about their experience, and you hear about those aspects of it. It can work. It absolutely can. The question is, should we, right? Should we? I worked in a financial services business with New York Life Insurance that the goal of the financial advisor was to be able to help someone make a complex decision, right? Consumers may not want to sit with somebody in their living room, or they may not want to have a conversation, but it was really important that they do, because otherwise they're going to make a complex decision without really having the information to do so. And as you said before, it's about, right, we don't want to make decisions in the dark. More so as a brand, right? Are you comfortable with consumers making decisions in the dark, right? That's where the should we question comes in, is, yeah, I can get a whole bunch of people to sign up and do this and buy my product, but do I feel okay with the fact that some of them are buying it when they don't need it? That there are people struggling buying something as a luxury versus the people that I want to talk to who are going to buy this as a necessity, right? Who this is for, you know, let's figure out how to get more of those folks than the folks that are going to buy it. Yeah, I can get them to buy, but they really don't need it. They shouldn't have it. They're just, you know, doing what we've, you know, said all along, which is marketing is separating a fool from his money, right? You know, it's sort of the old quote. Do we want to perpetuate that, right? Or do we want to, you know, reward and incentivize good behavior? And that's, I think, the questions, you know, we don't ask, because we're chasing profit. Businesses are chasing profit. Agencies are chasing profit. I can get my client to sign up for this new service. It's actually not much better than what they are doing now, but I can sell it that way. Should we do that? Right? Or do we really focus on what's needed? And I think that's the question that we have to ask ourselves over and over and over again. You know, it's not just about getting the dollar. It's about, did we earn it? Right? Is it quality?
I was saying, it comes back to the problem we're solving. Are we actually solving the real problem you have? And do you have the right solution in place? I feel like awesome. So many times we try and do like a square peg round hole, like, I see your problem, and I like sort of have this thing, and I really want the business. So like, I'll just make it work, versus like really thinking about, am I, again, coming back to that point of adding value at the end of the day might not be you. It might not be your business, but giving them the right thing is actually more valuable and could actually pay off in the long run than pretending to try and get the dollar today.
10 years ago, we had crazy storms in 08, 09, where we were living, 14 years ago now, I guess. Crazy storms, and our basement flooded. And we were like dead set, like, we need to figure this out. We need to get a sump pump. We need to get French drains. We need to do all this stuff. We had someone come in, and it's, I still remember it to this day, because it was one of the best moments. And I think, you know, to bottle this moment for customer service, where he said, listen, I take a look at what happened, right? Your stuff didn't actually come from, it came from the bottom, right? We had so much rain so many days that the water table grew. And looking back at the history of this area, I wouldn't do a thing, right? He was there to tell us, have him, us pay him for his service. And his response was, it's not worth it. Don't hire me. You don't really need this. And still that was, and guess what? When anybody ever calls, right, to ask for recommendation, that company, I don't know whether he's still there, that company is the one that we recommend. So it's that experience. It's that time of experience that I think you can really rave about. And I think that experience matters more because I think businesses really have to understand how, for most people in this world now, the money is just, it's a very hard place to be, right? Like whether it's for retirement, whether it's for cost of living today, yes, there are a lot of people living maybe, you know, with great means, but there's too many people that are still struggling and disproportionately. You know, again, we talk about a lot of times, you know, people of color or other parts of the, you know, other parts of this environment, that's where some of the diversity, those opportunities come in. I think people are just working too hard for that money for us to take it away so easily by, you know, by being that guy who rides into town and sort of like putting on a show and then, you know, walking away, counting the money. It's like, we've tried to move away from that, but we've, you know, inched closer and closer to it.
I mean, it's gone more underground. So it's harder to see. I think it's harder to see. I have questions around the AI piece, because as we're talking so much about, you know, being human and these manual connections, you are still a proponent of AI. So where do you see the value of that coming in relation to balancing the human element?
I love that question. It's a great question. It's something that, honestly, if everybody's not asking this of themselves, they're really missing something, because that, you know, no matter where you are, we used to say, right, like, you know, innovation could come from everywhere, right? Most junior person on the team to the most senior person on the team to the client, whoever. That's the same thing that's happening now, which is it exists, it's out there, it's only going to get better. But the question is, better for what, right? Have you established what your goals are, to your point? What problem are we trying to solve? And so right now, when I look at AI and I look at the tools from AI, I actually advise, you know, on the businesses that I work with, and then for the, you know, folks that stay connected to, what are the tasks, right, that are taking up a lot of time, right? What is, and are those things, you know, mechanical in nature, right? Is there a predictable way in which they're done? And it's really just, you know, something that can be moved to more automation. It's something that's ripe for automation. I think that's what you do. Audit and understand where the resources are being spent, where human resources specifically are being spent and time is being taken. And I think then audit those lists of things that you come up with and say, right, what is simply a task, and what is something that actually, because what I don't want to lose is that, as we remember, right, a lot of the training comes with those tasks, right? So if I automate some of those things, then I'm going to end up in a place where I stop hiring junior people because I don't need them to do those things. They're not going to learn. They're not going to have what they need to come to the next level. So I think a lot of these things have to be thought of, not just, right, that's the first step, but then you have to put it against what my goals are and then the business. But I often think that that's great. If you can take those tasks, automate them, and speed them up, you'll actually create new opportunities for learning, right? That actually becomes the foundation, right? If we had to, you might not remember this, but you know, when I first started, I had to go into the media room and look up, you know, ratings information and look up all these things, both locally and nationally. And we used, you know, these reports that were published by Nielsen and others. And that was, you know, that was replaced. And by the time you came in, that was foundational, right? So the same thing here, right? What's going to happen is those tasks are going to become foundational, and you're going to start from a different point of entry. And I think that's the important thing, is if we can audit and use that to take care of the automated tasks. And I mean that from a discovery standpoint, from a reporting, from a buying, from every part of the process. But what you can't take away is the oversight. Don't give, right, the automation the opportunity for oversight, because I think then you're taking the why out of it, right? Like the automation, for me, as much as you can train it, it's not going to really ask why in the same way and then apply that situation differently. But absolutely take as many, we see it in our own lives, right? Big fan of iRobot vacuums. Like there's a reason for it, right? Like
I love those things.
They love those things. Did it disproportionately impact potentially housekeepers and mm-hmm. others who were there? In some ways, it may have made their job much easier. In other ways, it may have taken away jobs, right? And taken away things that people need, because you can now just set it and forget it. Now, there may be opportunity for them to do other things. Right now you can focus on those other things. So I don't think you'll speak to anybody and say, oh yeah, I took care of my house and I did everything on my list. You'll never find somebody like that. Was never said ever. So the opportunity becomes, what are the next opportunities? And I think the people who attack it that way are going to be the ones who are successful. But don't say no, because if you say no, then you're slowing progress and you're slowing things that are going to be vital, and you're just going to be left behind because progress just happens without you.
I also think that if we don't embrace it now and figure it out, then we're going to have similar situations to like, and not learn from our past, you know, from the past. If you look at social media as an example, right, and how the regulation on that isn't strong enough, especially from an age standpoint, and the way that misinformation is rooted, as well as the echo chambers that we end up in, and more importantly, young kids end up in, is tragic. And so I think if we don't figure this out now and embrace AI and understand it, and more importantly, schools need to do this too and teach kids how to use it appropriately, like we did with research, right? Like we were given the internet and said, you're going to do a research paper, and here's how you need to make sure that you're validating the information, right? Same with AI. We need to make sure that whatever research we're doing, which is going to help speed us up, which is great, and how are we going to validate that information is correct and we're using it in the right way. I agree. I it's not something we can shy away from. We have to embrace it, and we have to learn how to use it correctly. In terms of our moral compass in that way, what do you see as like the fork in the road with this? Like, for me, as a very simple example, it's just like what I said, like just typing in a prompt and accepting the example at face value and off we go, right? Like there's some due diligence we have to do with this. What other examples do you see of us ensuring that we use this in the right way to not have the social challenge, like the social media challenges we're having now?
Yeah, and this happens all the time. I think it's a great question. I think my wife works in editorial in the pharma business on the agency side. And what happens is, right, you'll oftentimes get a claim, right, or something that, you know, is somewhat unsubstantiated or a different way to express that claim. I feel like that's a lot of what she does is to go out, right, and fact check and do those things. And I think I really do believe that, you know, whether it's the journalism school of, you know, make sure you have two confirmed sources right before you go to print and those things. I think right now there are two things that has to happen, because I think what we're talking about, a lot of the things that put the emphasis and the onus on the business or the publisher, right? I actually think there's a lot of emphasis as well on the reader, right? The consumer, right? The end user to the world that we're in right now, which is, A, you have to know that there are people out there that want to take your money and feed you misinformation, right? And so don't treat everything as false, but also, you know, be somewhat healthy. Skepticism is still a very, you know, good thing. You can learn from the person, right? You know, we that's why influencers are so important, because we trust their content. How do you develop that trust and that build that trust relationship? When it comes to you made the point of education and kids, right? Like we have to train our kids, because I think they're just naturally more trusting. Right. And so we really have to train and educate our kids around this as well. It's dangerous, right? Like it's not just the guy in the van with the lollipop that's dangerous now. It's right. It's the, you know, fraud scheme that lets you use your Alexa that you know how to use, or your phone or whatever it might be. And so they don't care, right? They're indiscriminate over whether it's kids or adults. It's content, right, that gets shown. But I think we have to be more discerning as consumers. We have to be more discerning in that way, and then be able to say, okay, this is wrong. And when we see that, it's about community, right? Being able to do that as a community. I think that's one of the key things. I know we talk about it when we talk about, you know, audience information. We talk about co-ops a lot, and we talk about sharing resources. And I really do want to see more of that. I want to see more of what's happening both in the industry where somebody comes up with a solution, and yes, there's money to be made off, and everybody wants something that they can have on their own. But let's share with a community, because then we can grow from there. We need to stop this. We've seen what's happened. I mean, come on, the ANA's recent report. It's not so, I mean, like it's recent, but like it's been every year for a long time, right? Like we know ad fraud exists, right? But now it's like quantified $20 billion, all these things. It's always existed. We knew it existed, and nobody wanted to stop it, because if I can make money off it, right, why do I want to, you know, I don't want to expose the problem, because then, like, as an agency, right, and if I'm buying stuff and I'm buying fraud, if I expose it, then I'm exposing myself. And I think that's like transparency and credibility and authenticity. All these things really mean that you would do it even if the finger's pointing back at you, right? That's what real transparency is. And I want to see when that happens that we don't try to, you know, as a society, cancel those people, right? Like when we blow the whistle on ourselves, the reaction shouldn't be get rid of them, let someone else do it. It should be, that's awesome. We have a brave, heroic person or company or organization here that's willing to flag themselves. That's a really big deal. Now, don't let them give the punishment themselves necessarily, but they're willing to call it on themselves. We see that all the time in college sports. If they flag themselves, you should get more credit. It's much easier to take someone, as probably you know, from your experience, both as a manager and myself and yourself as you know, when we started out, it's much easier to take someone who made a mistake and ensure they don't make that mistake again than it is to just get rid of that person and teach someone brand new all the things that they already know. So, you know, we got to stop, you know, whether it's the extreme, which is cancel culture, but anything else, like, let's not call out people's mistakes. Let's call out what the solutions might be and help that person. That's what we need to get to, is we need to be able to put the humanity back in that sense where it's, let's retrain and redevelop people and re-educate people so they can be more valuable in the world that we're moving into, than sort of toss them to the side in whatever way, shape or form, or sort of say, you know, one strike and you're out. That nobody wants to live in that world. It'll eventually come back to you, right? If you operate in that way, then you're going to be living that way.
People will constantly leave because people leave managers, not companies. It's true.
That's right. I love that. That's one of my favorite things, right? They leave bad situations, bad managers, not companies.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And I think we as managers, and you did a really good job of this, and I think it's maybe where I learned it, but giving people that space to fail that first time, and to, as long as there's progress over perfection of growth, right? And that accountability piece.
Don't make the same mistake twice, right? That's the rule I like to fall back on more, is don't make the same mistake twice, right? But part of that is, did I do the job I was supposed to do as your manager when you made it the first time, right? Because if I didn't help educate you, if I just was one of those people that said, you made a mistake, right? And then I just stole your work and fixed it and then sent it to the client, right? Like, hated that, right? Like, tell me what I did wrong, right? Send me the note, right? Let me teach me how to do those things and tell me where I'm making my error. And then I can adjust my GPS, right? I can adjust how my process. But if you take it away from me, right, and don't give me the chance, all that's going to happen is we're going to create a bottleneck. It's going to create bad things. I think that's where that's where it comes back to our role in utilizing the tools. Right. Like, it's, you can't, like, no matter how high you want to go, right, even if we create these tools that can do the process, right, all the way up to the top, there's still going to be that need at the very top to have oversight of it and to have the human element that's there. But we need to train people to know what's coming, right? We need to train people to know how to use these tools and how to talk to our clients about what the value is and what the mistakes might be, what the pitfalls are. And that's where it goes back to community, right? If you test and learn something, right, and you find something out, share it with a competitor. I have a great, you know, innovator I follow, an influencer out in the Israel tech space, Hillel Fuld, who's, I think, on, you know, one of the Forbes most influential people somehow. It's just amazing that he does this great work. But he always talks about this. He tells this to entrepreneurs all the time, which is, like, don't hide your ideas, right? Share your ideas. The community will make it better, right? You'll have to, you know, it comes down to the execution, right, in terms of whether you're going to be, you know, successful or not. But if you start hoarding and hoarding and hoarding, you're going to create this world that you don't want to live in, right? And you want to create a world that shares, that has community, that helps us grow. And then somebody will do it better. That's great. And then you'll do it better. And then you'll keep leapfrogging each other, but you'll grow together because now you've grown the size of the pie and the need for what you're providing and the service you're building.
Could keep going because I double down and tell all the stories around the importance. But it sounds like from my conversation with you, my conversation with some other folks, both on the podcast and behind the scenes, the market is really heading in the three directions. Like, advertising will always be a need, mostly because it's what keeps the media going, and that's important. And really what's going to build business in the long run, and from what I'm hearing, is community. Influencers, both of what you mentioned, and content, which is what you mentioned too. Like, the magnitude of these three things together is really what's going to propel companies forward, and the companies who can figure those three things out will both win, in my opinion, and I'd love your final word on this, in both business and building a better world.
Yeah, I think that's it's beautifully said. I think to add just one more thing, I think you're absolutely right. Like, these are the things that we're doing. I think that we have to, it goes back to the motivation. I'll just recap again. Like, we have to move from this, you know, can we to add this element of should we to it. So when we're developing our test and learns and optimization, then we're going to scale it. And the question is this going to be good, right? If this happens, not just for us, but is it going to benefit, right? Are we solving a problem? And is that problem that we're solving is not, right, is something that crosses lines around ethics and morals, and we have to be very careful with it, right? It's the Wild West, right, of a lot of these new tools right now, and we've seen this before, right? We've seen this before with the digital era, we've seen this before. In the mobile era, we've seen this before. Like, you know, where there is no oversight, there is, you know, a lot of overaction, right, and action that probably can be saved. And I think just if we can be thoughtful, if we can be clear with our motivation, and if we can be aligned to the fact that our purpose, right, go back to purpose of what we're here for, not just of what we're selling, but the purpose of what we're here for as businesses, as brands, as agencies. Like, what makes us different and what makes us great is really being able to go and drive that purpose through. Let's focus on that, right? You know, we talk about bringing your whole selves to work and all these things that happen. Let's let people do that. Let's create that world. Let's create the collaboration, diversity, and the community that we want. But it has to be a community of good. And a community that's doing the right thing, not a community of dollars, but a community of, you know, good that's really being able to do that. And that's, to me, is the biggest thing. And that's why I love being part of this industry, about, you know, reconnecting and talking with people like yourself, Carrie, and others. Because I think at its core, we all have the same, you know, drive to create good, to leave a legacy, to be able to do that and to be able to build that within our children and our children's children. And if we do that collectively, then we'll be in a good place. But if we don't, you know, if we let other things happen and we see things that are bad, but we don't highlight them, we don't flag them because we're afraid we're going to, you know, upset the boat or help our competitor or do that thing, then we're just as bad as the perpetrators themselves in a certain respect, because we're allowing it to continue. And I think that's, you know, let's sign up, you know, for that. Let's sign up for that moral and ethical approach to life. I love it. I obviously I'm, you know, visibly Jewish, and it's part of sort of where I came from and sort of part of the upbringing. And I know it's a little, you know, sometimes to some people maybe contradictory, you know, where a Jewish guy is telling you don't chase the dollar, chase the people and the morals, but, you know, it's stereotypes that we sometimes build, you know, build into, and that's what happens. But I think we're here collectively to be a light to other people, and the more that we can do that, the better off we'll be. And I just can't thank you enough for the platform to be able to talk through and recheck, because I need it too, right? I need to recheck where my, you know, moral compass and my heart is in the work that we're doing.
I'm so grateful for this conversation. I think it's so important as we look to these tools, these platforms, as we use our dollars to hold brands accountable, like Google and Meta, and our data is now absolutely a chip on the table of something we can hold companies to, in terms of how much we share and what we share. And we need to use that in order to help guide that morality. I am so grateful for this conversation. Before we go, you are more than a marketer. And I just would love to know, if you could travel to anywhere in the world right now with as easy as possible, assuming there's no, like, the bags you got to take with you and stand in long lines forever and all the things that sort of get in our way of getting up and going, where would you go and why?
It's a great question. It's a really easy one for me. I'll make it interesting. Before I do, though, I said this before, I seeing you in this capacity is like, nothing makes you feel better as a leader, right, than seeing people that you've at one time led but more worked alongside grow into their potential, and you know, that's you in spades. So I want to make sure I'm not remiss in mentioning that. But the place that I would go right now is very easily Israel, and I'll tell you why. We just sent our 16-year-old daughter on her first time, I guess, away from home overseas. She's been to some sleepaway camps or whatever it might be, but we sent her away to Israel, and she's there for about 40 days or so. And so for me, we're both missing her. And she gets like, I just want to be on a, like, hearing what she's doing. I want to be on a team tour right now. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, I want to call up and be like, do you need any chaperones? Place, right, where you didn't have as many responsibilities, and just to be able to take things in and not feel like, you know, you're just sort of building who you are as a person. And I'm just so jealous of what she's on. So I would join her right now on that, you know, teen, you know, sort of learning tour in Israel right now for the next few weeks. That's absolutely where I would go. But I would probably sit in the back and not tell her I'm there. You know, I'm saying, I want to take on all the other responsibilities again, but I just want to, you know, you probably have this experience too. I would love to be a fly on a wall for some of my children's sort of, you know, monumental experiences, right? If you could just be and watch them as they go through this, and not, right, don't be the parent, don't be the helicopter parent, don't try to give all this advice, but just, you know, watch them experience the world in a certain way. And that is just like, I wish we could do that. We never really get the chance to do that, because every time we see them, they know we're there. There are very few times that, you know, I had a couple probably, but there are very few times where we get to see them as they are and not see them as with us in the background. So it's really a rare opportunity.
Who they are for us versus who they are for the rest of the world is so different. And I feel like whenever I see my kids out in the world and being these amazing humans that they are, and sometimes they're really, really, most of the time, they're very hard at home. And it's like, why are you so hard here? And then you see them out in the world, it's like, that's why. I'm doing my job. It's hard at home. You're finding the boundaries. We're being good parents. Amazing. Because this is who you are in the world. And a real quick story on parenting, because I just love this conversation. I had to sign my, they do swimming here, which is amazing because we live by the sea. So kids need to learn how to swim. It's very important. And they have swimming every summer term, and they didn't have enough parent helpers for my kids' class. And so my husband was like, Henry can't do swimming and Ellie can't not do swimming. Like, that's just, we can't have this. Like, we're going to have to sign up. Then. Okay. I don't really know how I feel about this. And I had to talk myself into going like the first couple of times, because it's a lot of kids and I have to manage children. And this is really out of my comfort zone when they're not my own. And and we're in a hot room. And there's all these like mental blocks of like having to go do this thing. But then I get there and I can't pay attention to her because I have to manage the kids who aren't swimming. But I get to sort of see her out of the corner of my eye and her do this really brave thing that she's really uncomfortable doing. And it's just yes to that. Like, it's a rare moment. And thank you for reminding me of like the importance of those moments. I'm not going to get them that often. And that is definitely one of them.
Take the credit, you and your husband. And again, the whole the support system, you know, the village that I know you have around you, that really is like, I'll tell you, that's the one thing like I miss. When my kids were really young, I missed that. You know, my youngest is now 7, about to have my middle one's going to turn 12, and I said my 16-year-old, all three girls. I missed when they were really young and totally dependent, and when they would get sick and they would try to curl back inside you. I miss those days, but it's also you get a kind of joy that you didn't get, because you see them as adults or as turning into adults and human beings, as expressing opinions for themselves and talking for themselves. And I think that's just, and as they come home, it's the perfect time as we wrap this up. But like, you start to see them become real, and you got to see what choices they've made, right? How they've picked who they want to be versus who you are, right? And I always say, like, the way we should act is be the people that your kids think you are. But kids, they should choose who they want to be.
I love that. What a great spot to end on. Natan, I'm so grateful. Thank you for joining me.
Nothing but love, honestly. And just again, like I said, tremendous to see this. And I really just, you know, if nobody watches it, this is the most fulfilling thing, just to be able to talk to you and see how you've grown.
And I hope people will pay attention to the kinds of leaders we're looking for in the world. So thank you for emulating that. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to learn under you.
We've had tremendous ones too. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.